he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday. It is the Friday 10/20/23 edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And the fog of war continues to dim the earnings picture, which, you know, you can't blame the market for being worried about looking at the market through the fog of war. That's pretty typical, you know. In the 23 years I've been in the business, there's been a lot of different wars, 9/11 and all that came from that. But eventually earnings went out, okay? Well, we've got the Dow down right now. Let's see where we're at. We were just barely down, and I think we've gotten a little bit worse since then. The Dow is now down 113 points. It's at 33,301. It's down 34 basis points today. The S&P is down 37 basis points today, 42.62. The NASDAQ is down 39 basis points, 52 points, to 13,134. Oil's up $1.05 to 90.42 with the big war premium built in there. To the price of oil. It's not like the economy is slurping up all the oil in the world, right? It's a war premium. Gold is closing in on $2,000 per ounce. And at least the 10-year is backing down from 5. It's down 6 basis points to 4.92%. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, and we are back from Motown. We had a great trip there, and can't wait for our next trip back to Motown. And we're going to talk a little bit about Motown today and what is going on in the strike negotiations. There is news, good news, encouraging news today out of GM and the UAW. We had a rough day in the market yesterday, but guess what? The 10-year hit 5% yesterday. Now, is that a major resistance area? Is that a major resistance area for the S&P or for the bond market? Or can it continue to move higher? It kind of goes against what the market would normally do during the fog of war. Normally, you get a flight to safety, all right? And that flight to safety is buying bonds, running for the safe harbor of the bond market. Instead, we're getting just the opposite right now. We're getting selling of the bond market and rising interest rates, which shouldn't be happening. But I think our government is unloading, is lowering, putting back on its balance sheet. I think it's us that's selling into this. You've got a lot of demand right now because of the fog of war, so they use that opportunity. There's a lot of liquidity right now. That's just my theory, that the U.S. government is unloading of treasuries. And also, you know, needing cash to fund their operations going forward. And that's driving interest rates up 5% yesterday, 4.92% today. That's good news. And, you know, as I look at the long-term interest rate picture, 5.25 is where the real next level of resistance is. But obviously, this 5% is going to put up a fight and say, no, you're not going any higher than this. The 2-year is at 5.15%. The gap has narrowed from has narrowed 16 basis points on the yield curve. You also had yesterday, it was a bad day for the NASDAQ yesterday. The NASDAQ was down 128. The NASDAQ, very sensitive to interest rates. I think Cathie Wood's Sark fund was down about 3.5% yesterday. But Tesla had a major impact on the market yesterday. What happened to Tesla? Well, Cybertruck, right? Cybertruck is a very difficult assembly line to start a new line like that and to have it be profitable, to get it off the assembly line, to work out all the kinks. And,
Elon
Musk warned about, we're not going to see the earnings as quickly as we thought from this new product that they plan to roll out. And that shook. In fact, Tesla was down 10% yesterday. But then again, Tesla is a very volatile stock. It's very volatile. And that did, however, have a big impact yesterday on the NASDAQ. The other thing that had a big impact on the market yesterday, Chairman Powell. He talked, and kind of surprisingly, I thought he said that we still have a ways to go on inflation. He was speaking at the Economic Club of New York. And he said that lower inflation readings over the summer were a very favorable development, but he also reiterated that inflation was still too high. And furthermore, in the question and answer session, Powell said that there was evidence that monetary policy was not too tight right now, and that also spooked the market. But I would remind you, we are in earnings season right now. We've had 55 companies report this past week. We've now got about 15%, I would say, of the S&P 500 with a long ways to go. Next week's going to be a flood of earnings. And I believe that it comes back to earnings at the end of the day. It always has. Since I've been in the business, it's always followed earnings. But there are times when the fear, which is created by, the unknowns out of Israel, you've got rocket sirens going off daily, constantly, continually throughout the day, whether it be down in southern Israel at that northern border with Lebanon, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, etc. That doesn't exactly give us a very good backdrop right now to focus on earnings. Instead, I think the focus is more on fear. What if this war should expand beyond the borders of Israel? The bond market sell-off forces some fixed income ETFs to a 16-year low. Well, I believe in a lot of things, okay, but I do not believe in the asset allocation model. And I saw a lot of people that I met with in Bloomfield Hills that are parked smack dab in the middle of the asset allocation model. And you can boil down. You say, what is the asset allocation model? It's pretty much, if you're 50 years old, you should be 50% in stocks and 50% in bonds. Simple as that. If you're 70 years old, you should be 70% in bonds, which are considered to be safer than stocks. And as you get older, things should be safer, so the theory goes. And you should only be 30% in stocks. Like I say, there's a lot of things I believe in, but I don't believe in the asset allocation model. Put forth by Harry Markowitz many years ago, The Efficient Frontier. He was from San Diego. I drove by his house. He didn't live at a mansion, by the way. He lived in just a regular old house. Didn't seem like the old theory worked that well for him. Why don't I believe in it? Because there are times when I don't want to have any exposure to bond funds. And I've said many times, owning individual bonds is a different animal because you're going to hold them to maturity. Yes, they're going to fluctuate, but a bond fund doesn't have that luxury. And the asset alligators, use bond funds, which are totally subject to interest rates. So now you've got fixed income ETFs sliding to 16-year lows, and you're going to stand there with the wind blowing in your face and saying, yeah, but he's 65 years old. He should have 65% of his money in the bond funds. I don't care. I don't believe that. Okay? I totally disagree with that philosophy. And on the other hand, there's times when I want to have very little exposure to stocks. Well, he's 50 years old. He should have 50% exposure to stocks. Really? What about the P.E. ratio? What about the economy? What about the valuations? What about world events, etc.? Well, I believe in being just a little bit more vigilant than tweaking your portfolio by 1% towards stocks or bonds and lower your portfolio 1% to stocks as you progress through life. There's many more factors in the market that are more important than just your age. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Where are we going wrong? Well, they got a new mixing board there at SRN in Dallas. They produce my show, and the mixing board does not allow me to hear Barry. Now, that's not a very good mixing board.
I'm can you hear me now?
A little bit upset, yes. But I can hear you now.
Yeah.
But we sound like idiots in the first quarter of the show. Because they're probably hearing me talking over you and me ignoring you because I can't hear you in my ears. So I'm going to have to go to the top and call the CEO of Salem today to get this damn thing fixed. Okay, I've said my piece. I spend a lot of money with Salem every year. And to log into a show and not have it working right, that's unacceptable. I'm sorry. All right. But I have a great board operator. It's not his fault. It's the board's fault. All right. Now, Barry, I saw an article on Yahoo today that really caught my eye because I totally disagree with it.
Right. Yeah.
As much as I disagree with the asset allocation model, I disagree. And I don't find Yahoo – I don't find the young writers at Yahoo who have never managed a portfolio in their life – or have never analyzed a stock in their life, writing articles. This one is titled, and I look at the picture of the guy. He looks to be about 30 years old, something like that. He's got trees in the background, nice smile and everything. He says, don't count on earnings to save stocks from bond pressure. And his argument is, well, he says, we've had good earnings so far, and the market hasn't reacted. It's continued to go down. And I would say to him, that's a very myopic view that you have of the market. The market is looking ahead a year to a year and a half from now. And to look at the action, right, Barry, this past week with earnings and the market still going down, it's because interest rates are going up at the current time,
and
right?
Affecting how much people are willing to pay for that dollar of earnings, whether better or worse, right? And then how much you pay is going to be based on interest rates. So that's
so
your PE
it's
ratio.
It's a pretty idiotic article. Don't count on earnings to save stocks. Well, it depends, I guess, on your time frame. Is it today? No, I would say it's not. If it's next week, I would say no, it's not. If it's the and he's not, you know, allowing for the possibility of interest rates to start to head down, right?
It depends on the company, right? I mean, we're talking about don't count on Rivian's earnings to save the company, right? Because those earnings are far off into the future.
Exactly.
Some of the best earnings in the last, I think, yesterday, and I highlighted them when we're just because we tend to talk, want to make sure we cover both sides. And AT&T had a decent quarter.
Yes, they did.
Right,
and it didn't move the market. Right,
it didn't. And same, Procter and Gamble, great, good earnings yesterday. But those stocks are Those stocks are, a lot of those earnings we know, or and a lot of those earnings are not far off, right? We can calculate those because we know, you know, so many people are going to buy, you know, so much Tide in the next, you know, 3 months, right? So.
Yep. So, anyways, you know, it just depends on the time frame that you're looking at. Here's what's occurred last week. Let me check this out, make sure I have the right numbers. Last week, the forward PE for the S&P 500, I want to say, ended at 18.2. Okay, I just want to make sure of that, 18.2. So now you're multiplying those earnings by 18.2 as you look out over the next 1 to 2 years. Now, you get a temporary rise, a short-term rise in interest rates here this week. And as I looked this morning, the forward PE of the market is 17.8. So if you're going to multiply $250 by 17.8, versus 18.2, it's a pretty big number, right? And that explains the drop in the market this week. We didn't see earnings come down, expectations come down. We saw the multiple contract on rising earnings. But that's a temporary situation. Eventually, it's going to work its way out.
I've put together some numbers in terms of, you know, the amount of issuance in the bond market and you know, compared to, you know, what we've had recently, you know, other years. And for example, did you know that the U.S. Treasuries issued $15.7 trillion of debt in you know, this year, 25% more year over year.
Wow!
So it just shows you, and it doesn't mean that, you know, they, some of that issuance is rolling over old debt, right? You, if something comes due, you got to pay somebody, and then you put that debt out, you know, 5 more years or what have you. But their issuance is up, you know, up a huge amount. And then the Fed's balance sheet, which came out yesterday, the, you know, Fed has shrunk their balance sheet between over $500 billion and you know, $0.75 trillion in, you know, since this year. So
it sounds like my thesis is correct, that it's the U.S. government that is driving interest rates higher by their issuance?
By supply.
Their,
yes, supply
absolutely.
And demand. Right?
Okay.
And there's a bunch more supply out there. And, you know, and it doesn't, people keep talking about, has the, you know, the Treasury buyer changed? And, you know, you haven't seen really a ton of, you know, difference in demand. It's the fact that demand stayed the same and
supply
has gone up. Yeah. So.
Well, okay. And I would expect for that supply to eventually, or that issuance to eventually start to drop, right? Because
it's like a sponge, you know.
They're taking their balance sheet down, and eventually they're going to be done selling at some point in time for now. And so what impact, actually the forward PE closed at 18 last week. So we've come down 2 ticks to 17.8, and that's what's had the effect on the market this week, along with the fog of war. And I love every Saturday morning, you know, with the market closed, and, you know, kind of, that's another thing. This is the weekend. I think there's probably a high probability that Israel goes in there, you know, it was 2 weeks ago tomorrow. That the ground invasion begins. And, you know, there's just not a lot of appetite right now with the 30-year at near five, and Israel getting ready to invade the Gaza Strip. But still, I have to look out 1 to 2 years, right? I can't look at this week and today. And I think, you know, there's a few areas, yeah, that you could take a little bit of risk off. If you own anything that's still very interest rate sensitive or depends on like lending or whatever else, or home building or the building sector, that are going to feel the pain from these rates, there are some areas you can take. But does it make any sense to sell everything and go to cash at this point in time? It does if you're in bond funds, yes. But if you're in, you know, the big growth giants of today, at this point in time, the answer to that question, until further notice for me, is no. Now, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the UAW, Mary Barra, Cuban baseball players, and GM and the strike. We'll be right back. This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, there is maybe some good news out there on the UAW strike against the Big Three. General Motors rep says talks with United Auto Workers are progressing. They're moving toward a tentative agreement that would put an end to a major strike that has impacted production in the U.S. All the pieces are there. We just have to glue it together, said GM exec Mike Booth. He said the two sides are getting closer, but have yet to finalize an agreement on wages and pensions. General Motors has reportedly offered a 20% raise over 4 years. I think they were asking for a 45% raise, while rival Ford has offered 23%. And, you know, one of the arguments that I've heard, I was reminded of this, it was reported today that Microsoft paid top boss Nadella $48 million in fiscal 2023. That's what he made between his salary and his, you know, stock options and bonuses. And Mary Barra, the GM of the CEO of GM, made $29 billion. She made $2 billion in salary. No, not billion, million, $29 million in salary. $2 million in salary, and then the other $27 million came from stock options and bonuses and whatnot. And so the gap between the worker on the line, you know, is I think they, what were they saying, 300-1 or something like that, when it should be more like 30-1. And
yeah, I mean, it's pretty significant. not that that's, you know.
No, I don't know that there's a formula.
Not that there's anything new that a CEO tends to make more than, you know, your average worker. But, you know, I can make a difference between. You know, I would, you think earned that money better, right? I mean, I would certainly would probably put my money on the Microsoft side, right?
$48 million is what he got. Now, here's my point. Okay, I watched the very good game last night. It was an excellent game between the Diamondbacks, Arizona, and the Phillies. And of course, Bryce Harper is on the same team with Brandon Marsh. Okay, they both are outfielders out there. Where does, I don't know, does Harper play first base now these days? But anyways, Harper makes $25 million per year. Okay, and the same guy that plays right next to him, right, and bats number 8 in the lineup, well, Harper's 3 or 4. He's making $734,500. So there's also a talent factor in there somewhere, right? And how much do you contribute to the team? And if I do my math right, I mean, that works out to about 35 times Harper makes versus Brandon Marsh. Now, just for fun, let's go to Cuba. I remember when Yasiel Puig came up and was this all-star for the Dodgers.
Dodgers, right.
Now, in Cuba, everybody makes the same, roughly $56 per month. There's a dolphin in my backyard. That's pretty neat. You don't see that in Michigan, but I love Michigan. I think Michigan is one of the prettiest states in the union, along with Minnesota, along with Florida, along with South Carolina. Anyways, they all make, so no wonder these Cuban baseball players, right? Now the other guy over there on the Diamondbacks, Gurriel, his father was one of the greatest home run hitters of all time in Cuba. I don't think he ever came to the U.S., but his sons did. And they make a heck of a lot more than $56. So there's a fine line in there somewhere. And you know what I say? Just let the market figure it out. Okay? Let the market figure it out. I don't think that, you know, the Sean Fain, the head of the auto workers union, should be telling everybody what they make, nor should the government. I just think let the market work it out. You know, what is Bryce Harper worth? You know, let him go in there and negotiate his contract.
Well, and that's why you have a board of directors. You know, that's why you have a board of directors and every other, you know, corporate governance. You know, the actual, you know, really the one that matters in the old ESG acronym. It's the G, corporate governance, and corporate governance is what, you know, helps keep, you know, put it this way, if that CEO wasn't, you know, earning whatever, you know, the board kind of put out there for them, then, you know, the board's not going to have them around for long because the board's going to get pressure and, you know, to get rid of whoever that person may be.
Okay, so. Now here's my second point here. Be careful who you hire to trade for you. We're going to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Now remember when Joe Biden, He unloaded them at a very high price. They were sitting there at $80-$90 per barrel, and basically, you know, his ratings were not looking good. Gas was not looking good. People were sticking. Remember the stickers on the gas pumps?
The stickers are back. I've seen them again.
So what did he do? He unloads the Strategic Petroleum Reserves at $95 a barrel or whatever. And he says, I'm going to refill them. I remember him. He used his hand when it gets down to 62, and we're going to make money. Well, he's now refilling the Strategic Petroleum Reserves at $90 per barrel. It will seek to buy oil through at least May 2024, which could put some downward pressure, and which obviously leading up to the election, they don't want oil and gasoline prices soaring.
I was reading what's actually in those tanks at this point, and it was, you know, oil sludge, which is, you know,
Try running your RV or your suburban on sludge.
Yeah, and you can't get as much you know, refined gasoline or other refined petroleum product products using sludge. This is going to put pressure, however,
on gasoline prices. But I think the war in Israel exposed a lot of things in the economy and whatnot. You know, how important are your fences at the border, right? I mean, do we have Hamas in our country? I don't know. Can someone guarantee that we don't? I doubt it.
I was talking about at the border. I mean, even just here recently, a handful of Syrians, and I believe a handful of I forget the other country, but I mean,
being apprehended.
You don't know until, you don't know until you do
some
your,
terrorist event happens.
Right. Well, you gotta do your due diligence before, I mean, on the front end.
Yeah. And the other point I would make is, you know, what is Hamas crying for there in the Gaza Strip? They need energy. They need oil. And, you know, Israel had cut off their oil and their energy, but they're going to turn it back on. So, I mean, when push comes to shove, you better have a strategic petroleum reserve for your military or you'll be in trouble. Now, let's go to a happier note. Piper Sandler remains bullish on stocks despite recent uncertainty, okay? Now, they agree with me, but I think they're a little bit off. I don't think this makes much common sense. Piper Sandler reiterated its year-end S&P 500 target of 4,825. That's like doubling down on your prediction that is going to be pretty difficult to reach. We're at 4,300 right now. We got to go up 500 points for Piper Sandler to be right. Personally, I don't see that in the cards. I think we're going to end the year somewhere in the 4,500 area or whatnot. And, you know, just based on the projections, I think we have the pieces in place to go to 5,000 and beyond, you know, next year. Maybe Bostic, Fed's Bostic, who's pretty hawkish, says, you know, I could see some rate cuts by the middle of next year. But anyways, there's a firm that does think that earnings will win out is basically what they're saying, and I do agree with that. I think eventually, through the fog of war, and when when the Fed is done, lowering their balance sheet, and bringing, they're going to have to continue to bring bonds to market. But when you've got them selling and them issuing, that's a double whammy that has driven these rates up to 5%. But at the same time, they want to get inflation down to 2%. So they think, you know, that this 5% will be very effective, very quick, get it over with. Let's get inflation down to 2%, especially before next year's election, right? So anyways, I think through the fog of war and through this 5% that we're at right now, I think that, you know, we could see earnings are going to eventually win out. Okay, now the last thing.
You think of a paper towel, you've got a pile of water on the table, right?
And
that's the amount of extra issuance that the U.S. had to do, right? And throw a paper towel on there, well, it's not going to absorb it all.
No, saturated.
At that first moment.
But at some point in time, that supply is going to be worked off.
Right,
the multiple will stabilize, which it hasn't moved much. It's going between 17.5 and 18.5. And earnings have not changed. But I will have an important update today. Get tomorrow's newsletter, 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. We'll be right back. We'll look a little underneath the surface of the market. You got to go where you want to go. And welcome back to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. You got to go where you want to go, do what you want to do. Okay, now, the other argument I'm going to make here, I'm not a fan of being diversified, Barry, just to be diversified. Okay? Well, I'm supposed to be diversified. And I can't tell you how many times, as we met with a lot of folks over the last 2 days, I said, I can't find a whole lot more when it comes to large cap stocks than 20-25 right now that I would own, all right? And, well, you know what? Then that's not diversified enough. So the opposite of that, I'm just not a big fan of Fisher. I have seen so many Fisher portfolios over the years. He's got a much bigger advertising budget than I do. I mean, He's got a lot. He's got billions under management, okay? And, you know, time after time, I have people that leave Fisher because, number one, there is really no defense. Fisher stays fully invested all the time. But I would just say that as I look at this stuff, he's diversified just to be diversified. Okay, I got to have like one in the auto industry.
Looks like the S&P 500.
Yeah, or even worse, really.
Right.
Because I just think, I don't know, I've got to have one in, in all these, I got to own American Express because it's a financial. You know, there's times I don't want to own any financials. There's times I don't want to own any very few technology stocks like last year. There's times when I don't want to have anything from the automobile sector. There's times when I don't want anything from the healthcare sector. There's times when I don't want to go outside of the U.S., which he does a little bit. So I recently had a portfolio come to me, and all of a sudden, you know, I normally have 125 holdings to look at every day. Total, because between the four portfolios and stuff that people have brought in that I haven't sold yet, all of a sudden it shot up to 295. I go, where did 170 stocks come from that I got to look at today? They came from Fisher, and they came from another client who must have had 100 little pieces of garbage in them. I don't believe in owning garbage stocks. And, you know, I would just say, I mean, if you're just filling up the bag to fill up the bag of baseball cards, you're putting a bunch of filler in there to get to the Bryce Harpers of the world. Those are the cards that are worth something and are valuable. It's the same way in the stock market. I mean, to just put Ford in there because it's Ford, and to put American Express in there just because it's American Express, to me, I've seen this many times. It's being diversified just to be diversified. And that's kind of pretty much the asset allocation model, isn't it, Barry? It's the same concept. Only you're in the asset allocation model. There's a massive firm in Detroit that manages money connected to the automobile industry, and you know they own like ETFs that own 5,000 stocks.
Yeah, I mean, in the name sounds like, you know, it makes it sound like that you know some spreadsheet or model is doing the work in the background,
no.
Right? Based on when you hit the, you know, I haven't heard the Harry Markowitz name
it's
in a while,
H
and
thing.
I heard it in the first segment. But yeah, it's the number one issue with any theory when it comes to investing is the, you know, rational investor theory, right?
Yes.
That every investor is a rational
efficient
investor.
Frontier.
And we know, you know, none of us, right? Especially in a portfolio setting, it's easier to be rational in a individual investor setting, particularly at one single individual.
Yeah,
investment.
Every individual's different.
No one's necessarily rational, right? So
that would be like putting every patient on the same medicine and giving the same, whether they, you know, were 80, 40, 30, 20, it doesn't make any sense.
And that mix shoots for mediocrity, right? The trick is, you know, particularly as this business has moved more to a quote unquote fee based, system. You know, the thing is really your big institutions, you know, want to keep folks around as long as possible.
And it's
right?
an asset gathering.
Right.
Business.
You don't want to put your net, you know, so in that instance, you know, you're not going to make you real happy.
No. Nope.
They're trying not to make you real mad, and they're going to make you, you know, kind of suffer along in silence, right? And, you know, and just kind of meander along. If they can shoot for the middle, then, you know, that's for them is kind of the safer place to be. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we're well,
used to
anyways,
putting, you're used to putting your neck on the line.
Now,
so
let's just make one thing simpler here. Let's just get the bond to stock mix right. And 70-30, you're 70 years old, 70 bond, 30 stock. You know what? Let's get that right to begin with. Let's be tactical. Instead of just using your age, let's take a look at the interest rate environment. And let's
What's
just
going
be
on
tactical.
In your world, right?
Let's begin with a zero bond, other than individual bonds, okay? But and we have a lot of people that I would have them 100% in individual bonds today. They should not go any further than that. They've got a time horizon of 3 to 5 years. They have a pretty predictable outcome, and they have very little volatility or risk. But when it comes to bond funds and the massive amounts of money that are in these bond funds, because of this theory, which is diversification on steroids and only taking age into account, boy, I tell you what, that is as mediocre as you can get. So anyways, that's my two cents on that subject. Let's begin. Let's just get the bond stock mix right, and then go from there and break it down from there. Okay,
well, folks, you got to think of too. Here, this people miss. If you have someone who has a pension and a Social Security payment, right, that's going to end up, you know, making up 80% of their income in retirement. Well, I would already argue that those two things look very bond-like. So you probably could do less bonds than you would if you didn't have the pension.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But none of that gets built into
the allocation model. The interest rate environment,
right?
Okay,
so,
where we've gone from, we went from 0.5% on the 10-year, and now we're at 5%. Yep. That's the biggest bond bear, and we knew it was coming. And to not get off the tracks, and to just steer forward with your one size fits all model makes no sense to me whatsoever. Get tomorrow's newsletter. I'll have a very important update on earnings because we had 55 more added in this past week. Go to GundersonCapital.com. And if you'd like to set up an appointment with us, you know what? I don't think we've met with anybody this past week that I don't think we can help. 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities.
Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.